Blog Talk Radio.
Never give up the struggle. Shalom, shalom, shalom. Good morning and Babakwa Tawab, which means good morning in the ancient Paleo Hebrew. I'm your brother, your host, your friend, as always, Tazapah. Welcome to the show, y'all. A little inspirational music this morning, man. That is one of my favorite songs, man. The Message. That's back when we used to actually make music that had positive content, y'all. I know that is far in between these days, man. But that's one of my favorites. So, y'all, if it's your first time tuning into the show, this is FYI Thursdays. And I do this a little different than I do my podcast on Tuesday. On Tuesday, I do news about an hour, then I jump into a topic. Well, on Thursday, it's just all topic, man. And topic is based off of, you know, things that I see, things that I want to dive into and further expound on. And also questions, y'all. Y'all have questions. Send your questions in, please, to either me or Mashaba. And we will do a whole class just based off of your question, man. We love questions, man. When you have questions, that means that you've been studying or you've been pondering or meditating on something, man. And that's always good, especially this day and time, man, when we've got so many devices at our fingertips, walking around with computers in our pockets. It's definitely good to actually, you know, shut everything down, man, and just take the time to meditate, to think deeply upon, you know, and take the time to get in the book, man, and study. The more you study, the more questions you'll have, man. If you ain't got no questions, then you ain't been studying, man, and you ain't been meditating. So, y'all, with that said, I want to send shouts out to all our affiliated schools, the brothers here in San Antonio, the brothers in VA, the brothers up in Rochester, New York, also the brothers down in H-Town, the brothers in Albuquerque, New Mexico, the brothers in Cali, and the brothers in Canada, and shout out to Cabo Cop down in Guatemala. The Water Mashaba for hooking up the broadcast, my brother, my friend, my partner, man. So, y'all, let me go ahead and get it cracking. Matthew chapter 6 and verse 9. And I hope everybody is healthy. Hope everybody is in good spirits. Just found out a sister is sick. And I want to ask y'all to send prayers up for the sister Abadiah, man. Great sister, hardworking sister, man. I can't say enough about the sister Abadiah, man. She's known not just in one camp, but in two different camps, all of the same camp. But we know her very well here in the San Antonio, camp. She stayed with us for probably about, 2 years, 3 years she was here before she went back to Houston. But good sister, man, good sister. And I just asking for prayers for the sister. Y'all send y'all prayers up for the sister Abadiah, man. Mashaba, I know you would definitely add it to your prayer list, man. And that's dope, Ike, what you got going on. I love your prayer list, the prayers that you send up for the sick, man. That is Tawabot. All right, y'all. So let me go ahead and get into it. Matthew chapter 6 and verse 9, and it reads, "After this manner, therefore pray ye, Our Father art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done in earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day, our daily bread. And forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom and the power and the glory forever. Amen." All right, y'all. So let's get Psalms also. So the Lord's Prayer, y'all, we should be sending this up on a daily basis, so we can get the hell on, man. Also, y'all, and Mashaba, send prayers up for the brother Shathat. Matter of fact, let me make sure I got his name right. I always get his name mixed up with the other brother in Houston. Shaquat. Send prayers up, please, y'all, for the brother Shaquat Gabbar. Young brother, young dynamic, strong brother, man. Joined the camp when he was 18, I believe. 18, 19, something like that. Levi, brother from Florida. I just found out he was Levi, man. I did not know that, but it makes sense. Good brother, man. So y'all please send prayers up for that brother. Psalms chapter 118, verse 24. This is the day which the Lord hath made. We will rejoice and be glad in it. So good or bad, happy or sad, the Most High brought you to it. He'll bring you through it, and you'll come out better on the other side because of it, y'all. Please believe me. All right, y'all. So I wanted to dive back into a class I started a couple weeks back entitled History of the Gentiles, Part 3. And I know I had dabbled and got into another class, y'all. I apologize. Sometimes I have so much stuff going on in my head that I be just trying to get it out, man, and not realizing that I might be confusing some of y'all, or y'all might be waiting for me to get back, finish a class, and I don't get back to it, so you think I ain't dealing with the class no more. But this is when I started, and I'm going to finish this. I ain't gonna touch nothing else. I ain't gonna put nothing else together until I finish this class right here, y'all. Y'all got my word. All right, so the last part of this class, part two, we were going over, and I was looking on the Wikipedia Jerusalem timeline, and we were just going over the captivities that Israel had been in, the many captivities that Israel had been in, and we were discussing the Neo-Babylonian period, which was from 733 BCE and all the way to 670 BCE. And in particular, matching this up with the Bible, let's go to 2 Kings chapter 17. This is essential, y'all. I know I'm going through a lot of history, but the class is entitled History of the Gentiles. So you have to understand this whole term, Gentile, and understand the history that the Gentiles had in relation to the Israelites. And I've gone over this in this class, showing that the Gentiles, they worshiped idols. They were and still are idolaters. They're pagans, man. They worship other deities, and they have never been familiar directly, intimately, with the God of the Bible. I mean, they've heard of the Most High, and they've dealt with the Most High. The Most High has dealt with them, I say it more correctly, by roundabout ways or directly for something that he wanted to get accomplished. But the Most High, the God of the Bible, is definitely the God of the Israelites and not the God of the whole world, man, as people are misled to believe, and this is all throughout the Bible. So in order to understand this, before we get to the New Testament and we get all twisted up in theology and religion that tells us that everybody is the same and Christ died for everybody, he's coming back to save everybody, we have to understand the history of these people who are loosely referred to as the Gentiles in the New Testament. All right? So let's get 2 Kings chapter 17. I'm going to start at verse 19. Just a little small recap, and then we're going to keep going. So verse 19 reads, "Also Judah kept not the commandments of the Lord, their God, but walked in the statutes of Israel, which they made." Now, the reason, and if you didn't know, the reason Judah is mentioned here in Israel, and it's two separate names, but it's representing the same people. And when I say the same people, it's representing, these two names are representing the 12 tribes as a whole, the nation of Israel as a whole. But around 930 BC, the kingdom split up. So you had the northern kingdom, which were taken out of their land by the Assyrians around 722 BC, all right? But you had the northern kingdom, then you had the southern kingdom. The southern kingdom consisted of three tribes, Judah, Benjamin, and Levi. And they were taken out later on, and we're going to get to that, around 586 by the Babylonians, okay? And then others came behind them. But in verse 19, this is what it's talking about. It's talking about history, y'all. The northern kingdom, and I went over this, were took out, like I said, around 722 B.C. under the Assyrians. And that was, what's his name? Tiglath-Pileser, Shalmaneser, all of them was part of the Tiglath-Pileser genealogy. Sennacherib, all them people, all the Assyrians, they took the northern kingdom out. And the northern kingdom is also known as the 10 tribes or 9.5 tribes, commonly referred to, and those tribes being led by an Ephraimite named Jeroboam. So this is the aftermath of what happened after, after the northern kingdom was took out of Israel, the northern half of Israel. So I'm going to read this again, 2 Kings chapter 17 and verse 18. Therefore the Lord was very angry with Israel and removed them out of his sight. There was none left but the tribe of Judah only. So it says Judah here, but we know through 1 Kings chapter, you can go back and read this, 1 Kings chapter 17, 18, 19, that there were there was Benjamin and also Levi, some of the Levites that were still occupying the southern kingdom. Even though it says in verse 18 that Judah was left only, that's not true. So verse 19, also Judah kept not the commandments of the Lord, their God, will walk in the statutes of Israel, which they made. So the statutes of Israel, the northern tribes, was idolatry. So you find out Judah was doing some idolatry also. The southern kingdom was practicing idolatry also. Verse 20, and the Lord rejected all the seed of Israel and afflicted them. Now listen to what it's saying, verse 20, and the Lord rejected all the seed of Israel. So when it's talking about all the seed of Israel, he's talking about all the idolaters of our nation, all the people of our nation, excuse me, and particularly the northern kingdom. He said he rejected them. It's going to prove it. Watch this, verse 20. And the Lord rejected all the seed of Israel and afflicted them and delivered them into the hand of spoilers until he had cast them out of his sight. Here it is right here, verse 21. For he rent Israel from the house of David, and they made Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, king. And Jeroboam drave Israel from following the Lord and made them sin a great sin. Talking about the northern kingdom. Verse 22. For the children of Israel walked in all the sins of Jeroboam, which was idolatry, which he did. They departed not from them until the Lord removed Israel out of his sight, as he had said by all his servants, the prophets. So was Israel carried away out of their own land to Assyria unto this day. And the king of Assyria brought men from Babylon and from Cutha and from Avah and from Hamath and from Sepharvaim and placed them in the cities of Samaria. So you had these other nations come in to the northern kingdom of Israel, and specifically here, the capital of Israel, which was Samaria, it says, instead of the children of Israel. And they possessed Samaria and dwelt in the cities thereof. So you have these nations that are in our land. Verse 25. And so it was at the beginning of their dwelling there that they feared not the Lord. Therefore the Lord sent lions among them, which slew some of them. So this is what happened when these other nations were in our land. The Most High sent lions that was basically murking them. Esau made a movie about this called Ghost, The Ghost in the Darkness. I believe it was, who was it, the dude that played Batman? Val Kilmer and Michael Douglas. Good movie. All right, so this is what happened. where was I at? Verse 26. Wherefore they spake to the king of Assyria, saying, the nations, listen to what it's saying, verse 26. So they told the king, the nations which thou hast removed and placed in the cities of Samaria know not the manner of the God of the land. So what he was saying here was that these other nations that you brought in, verse 24, all those nations, they don't know the Most High. He was the God of the land, of the northern kingdom of Israel. He was their God, the Israelites' God, always has been. This is why he's telling you these other nations, they don't know him. So how the hell could they possibly know him when we get to the New Testament? Come on, man. People really don't read the Bible. But I ain't going to blow it. I'm going to keep reading. We're going to lead up to it. It says, therefore he has sent lions among them. And behold, they slay them because they know not the manner of the God of the land. Verse 27. Then the king of Assyria commanded, saying, carry thither one of the priests whom ye brought from thence, and let them go and dwell there, and let him teach them the manner of the God of the land. So what this king is saying is, go and get one of those Israelite priests that y'all took out of the land. Bring him back so he can show these other nations how to serve the Most High, their God, the Israelites' God. Verse 28. Then one of the priests whom they had carried away from Samaria came and dwelt in Bethel and taught them how they should fear the Lord. So did the other nations know how to serve the Most High? Did they know about the laws, the sacrificial laws, the law on agriculture and things of that nature? Yes, they actually did. Because who taught them? Some of the priests that they took out of land that they had to bring back to show the people how to serve the Most High, how to please them. So are the other nations familiar with our laws, statutes, and commandments? Yes, they are. Verse 29. Howbeit, every nation may God, listen to this, verse 29. Howbeit, every nation may gods, little g's, of their own. Why did they do this? Because this was in their nature to do in the first place. Remember in Deuteronomy, it said that the Most High had gave all the other gods to the nations anyway. So this was not anything that was abnormal. This is what they were prone to doing. Once again, they were pagans. They were idolaters, the Gentiles. And the word Gentile means nation, also means heathen. All three other words are synonymous with one another. Verse 29 again. Howbeit, every nation made gods of their own and put them in the houses of the high places which the Samaritans had made, every nation in their city wherein they dwelt. So this was all the nations that the king of Assyria had placed in the northern kingdom. This is what they was doing. So they was practicing idolatry, and they were also trying to serve the Most High. It's no different than now. This is basically religion before religion. And I'm saying this because all religion is paganism with a bunch of the scriptures and the Most High thrown in. That's all religion is. Verse 30. And the men of Babylon made Sukkoth Benoth, and the men of Kut made Negral, and the men of Hamath made Ashima. So these are all the deities that they were creating so they could serve. Verse 31. And the Avites made Nebaz and Tartak, and the Shephavites burnt their children in fire, Adamelech and Amad-Melech, the gods of Shephavarim. So you see how the other nations were still practicing idolatry in the land of Israel at this time. All right, we're going to read to verse 41. It says, so they feared the Lord and made unto themselves. So it says they feared the Lord, meaning what? They were practicing on how to serve the Most High, but they were still worshiping these other deities. They were still pagans. Verse 32. So they feared the Lord and made unto themselves of the lords of them priests of the high places, which sacrificed for them in the houses of the high places. They feared the Lord and served their own gods, little g's, after the manner of the nations whom they carried away from thence. Unto this day they do after the former manners. They fear not the Lord, neither do they after their statutes. Meaning what? The nation, they don't really fear the Most High. They're still pagans, and they don't do the commandments of the Most High. It says, or after their ordinances, or after the law and commandments which the Lord commanded the children of Jacob, whom he named Israel. I hope everybody is understanding this. The other nations, they ain't trying to do the commandments. They never was trying to keep the commandments. This is why in religion today, the first thing they tell you is what? Oh, the law is done away with. That's not a coincidence, y'all. These heathens never kept the law. That's why they don't want you to keep it. When they get you to not keep the law, then they understand that now you're being disconnected from the Most High. Verse 35, with whom the Lord had made a covenant. Come on, y'all. Let me read it in context. Let me shut up real quick. Verse 34. I'm going to read 34 and 35. Unto this day, they do after the former manner. They fear not the Lord, neither do they after their statutes, or after their ordinances, or after the law and commandment, which the Lord commanded the children of Israel, whom he named Israel. I'm sorry, the children of Jacob, who he named Israel. Verse 35. With whom the Lord had made a covenant and charged them, saying, ye shall not fear other gods, nor bow yourselves to them, nor serve them, nor sacrifice to them, but the Lord who brought you up out of the land of Egypt with great power and a stretched out arm, him shall ye fear and him shall ye worship, and to him shall ye do sacrifices. And the statutes and the ordinances and the law and the commandment which he wrote for you, ye shall observe to do forevermore. And ye shall not fear other gods. See how the Most High just, he kept warning us profusely not to serve other gods, not to be pagans, not to be idolaters. The other nations, however, he had no problem with them being idolaters because that was given to them. Verse 38. In the covenant that I made with you, ye shall not forget, neither shall ye fear other gods. But the Lord your God ye shall fear, and he shall deliver you out of the hand of all your enemies. Howbeit they did not hearken, so we didn't listen. Of course we didn't listen. And I don't think people understand this, man. If you don't get Israel, the Israelites, falling into idolatry, you basically wouldn't have a Bible. I don't know if y'all really understand this. If you don't get us not following the law, statutes, and commandments, you wouldn't have a story. There would be no Bible. It would have been the children of Israel kept the commandments of the Most High and lived happily ever after. That's all it would have been. That's all that the Bible would contain. But the reason the Bible is so big, it's a big book, is because we didn't keep the commandments. And I'm stressing this, y'all, because I'm stressing this for non-believers, and I'm also stressing this for our Israelite brothers who believe that we shouldn't keep the law anymore, that believe that the Gentiles are going to be saved, and all this other nonsense. They really don't get this. If we never would have been doing what the other nations was doing, which is idolatry, there wouldn't be a book. There wouldn't even be Christ popping up on the scene. to save the Israelites from their sins. None of this would have happened. Like I said, it would have been a short book, a short read. The Israelites, Most High gave them the commandments. Boom, they kept them. End of story. They lived happily ever after. But it didn't go that way. Unfortunately, it didn't go that way. And now we've got tons of history saying that we didn't keep the law, statutes, and commandments and what it cost us. Verse 41. So these nations feared the Lord and served their graven images, both their children and their children's children, as did their fathers, so do they until this day. Do y'all hear this? It's talking about us. Till this day, we're serving graven images. To this day, we're idolaters. To this day, we're not keeping the commandments of the Most High. Like I said, this is why we have a Bible. So big, so extensive. All right, y'all. Let's go to, I got to get this. Let's go to Ecclesiastes chapter 4, verse 18. The whole Bible is basically centered around us keeping the law, statutes, and commandments. That's why I really don't get how brothers can say that we don't have to keep the commandments no more when this is the nucleus of our being. It doesn't make sense, man. Ecclesiastes chapter 4, verse 18. Let me see. Nope. Wrong verse, y'all. I'm sorry. Where's the one I'm looking for? Give me a second, y'all. Let me find it. 3:18, not 4. Let me correct this. Ecclesiastes 3:18. I said in my heart concerning the estate of the sons of men, that God might manifest them, and that they might see that they themselves are beasts. So this is David speaking, and he's saying that man is beast. Why is a man a beast? Because a man, just a natural man, a Neanderthal, does not have a moral code, does not have ethics, does not have rules. Us, without the commandments of the Most High, we be like animals. Think about that for a second, y'all. You ever seen a dog in heat, a female dog in heat? A female dog in heat will literally have intercourse with another dog in the middle of the street in traffic. Real talk. And I know y'all done saw this because they're going based off of what? Their instinct, what they feel, how they feel, their lust, their craving. This is us without the commandments. I hope y'all listening. Us without the commandments are like dogs in heat in the middle of traffic having intercourse. No care about getting ran over by a car. No care about who sees us. No, ain't no shame in our game. This is us without the commandments. Why are the commandments so important? Deuteronomy chapter 4, verse 5. Behold, I have taught you statutes and judgments, even as the Lord my God commanded me, that ye should do so in the land whether ye go to possess it. Keep therefore and do them, for this is your wisdom. Why are the commandments so important? Because the commandments is wisdom, the correct application of knowledge. And you look at the set of laws, you look at the moral law. The moral law teaches of what, man? What's moral and what's not? So when we won't be having sex in the middle of traffic. That's not moral. So so we won't be homosexuals. That's not wisdom. That's not the Most High. That's beastly. Reacting off your impulses and your emotions. That's not being a man. That's being a beast. That's why David said it. Wisdom is what? Hey, man, that's his woman. Let me not be hitting on her and trying to get in her pants. I wouldn't want nobody doing it to me. That's wisdom. These are just a couple examples of the moral law. What about the civil law? Hey, I'm not going to take this dude's car because it ain't my car, it's his car. Civil laws deal with property. I don't want nobody doing it to me. Wisdom. Ceremonial laws. Hey, the Sabbath is coming up. Hey, let me keep pure thoughts on this day. Let me dedicate this time to the Most High. Let me put what I want and what I got going on to the side. And let me worship and serve the Most High on this day. Because he's the one that gave me life. He's the one that gave me all these things to enjoy in the first place. That's wisdom. Verse 6 again. Keep therefore and do them, for this is your wisdom and your understanding in the sight of the nations. Why did it say in the sight of the nations? Because the nations were idolaters. They were pagans. So they were going to notice how much wisdom we had and we weren't beastly like them. This is what was supposed to happen. I know everything is flipped now. We more beastly than the nations. It says, keep therefore and do them, for this is your wisdom and your understanding in the sight of the nations, which shall hear all these statutes and say, surely this great nation is a wise and understanding people. This is what was supposed to be said about us. But we start following the example of the other nations. Now, let's go to this timeline. And give me a second, y'all. Here we go. All right, so we're going back to the Jerusalem timeline that I got off of Wikipedia, and we're going to go to 599, y'all. 599, all right. So 599 to 597 BCE. First Babylonian siege. Nebuchadnezzar II crushed a rebellion in the kingdom of Judah. So talking about the southern kingdom. Because remember, we already went over the northern kingdom, how they was took out. They was took out by the Assyrians around 722 BC. So this is the northern kingdom. No, I'm sorry, this is the southern kingdom we're talking about here. 599-597 BCE. First Babylonian siege, Nebuchadnezzar II crushed a rebellion in the kingdom of Judah and other cities in the Levant, which had been sparked by the Neo-Babylonians' failed invasion of Egypt in 601. Joachim of Jerusalem deported to Babylon. All right, so that's from Wikipedia. Now let's go in the book and get what we just read out of Wikipedia. Let's see if they match up. So let's go to the book of Daniel now, y'all. Let's go to Daniel chapter 1. Daniel chapter 1, and we're going to read verse 21, y'all. It says, in the third year of the reign of Joachim, we just read this. It says, King of Judah came Nebuchadnezzar, and we know it is Nebuchadnezzar II, King of Babylon, unto Jerusalem and besieged it. Now, this is very important to remember, too, y'all, and that's why I emphasize this, Nebuchadnezzar II, because sometime you'll read, like we might read about Nebuchadnezzar in another book. such as Jeremiah or something. And it won't be talking about the same Nebuchadnezzar. It'd be talking about maybe his son or his son's son. And in particular, it really gets like that by the time you make it to the Greeks, man, because they just kept naming their sons after them forever. So you might get mixed up with which one it was, which son it was. So this is dealing with Nebuchadnezzar II. So verse 2, and the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hands with part of the vessels of the house of God, which he carried into the land of Shinar to the house of his God. You see this, right? Into the house of his God. So this is the Babylonians. The Babylonians would be your current day Ethiopians, Africans. They destroyed the temple of Jerusalem. Once again, this happened around 586 BC. Matter of fact, let's get that. So in verse 2 again, then we're going to go back to Wikipedia. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hands with part of his vessels of the house of the Lord, a house of God, which he carried into the land of Shinar to the house of his God. See, they was idolaters, y'all. And he brought the vessels into the treasure house of his God. So what he did was, he brought all the things that came out of our temple, Solomon's temple, the first temple. He stole them when he destroyed Jerusalem, and he put them in his God's temple that he was worshiping. And I believe they worshiped Baal and a host of other gods, too. Now, let's go back to Wikipedia real quick, and I'm going to read 587 to 586 BCE. Second Babylonian siege. So the Babylonians, they seized Jerusalem a couple of times. They basically occupied the city as well as the northern kingdom, because the Babylonians used to be a part of the Assyrians. It was the Assyrian-Babylonian empire. They were together. But then they had wars between themselves, and then they broke off from one another, or the Assyrians, a lot of them were incorporated in the Babylonians during the Babylonian reign. So it says 587, 586 BCE, second Babylonian siege. Nebuchadnezzar II fought Pharaoh, a priest's attempt to invade Judah. Jerusalem mostly destroyed, including the first temple, and the city's prominent citizens exiled to Babylon. It says, see Nebuchadnezzar Chronicle. So this is verse 2. Read it again. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand with part of the vessels of the house of God, which he carried into the land of Shinar to the house of his God, and he brought the vessels into the treasure house of his God. They're with me. Verse 3. And the king spake unto Aspenaz, the master of his eunuchs, that he should bring certain of the children of Israel and of the king's seed and of the princesses, children in whom was no blemish, but well favored and skillful in all wisdom and cunning and knowledge and understanding science, and as such had ability in them to stand in the king's palace, and whom they might teach the learning and the tongue of the Chaldeans. Now, the Chaldeans, and the Babylonians are warned, y'all. So the capital of Babylon was Chaldea. That was the capital. So when you see the Chaldeans being mentioned, it's basically the Babylonians. Babylon was the capital of Chaldean. Babylon was the capital. So when you see them being mentioned, they're one and the same. Verse 5. And the king appointed them a daily provision, king's meat, and of the wine which he drank, so nourishing them 3 years, that at the end thereof they might stand before the king. Now among these were of the children of Judah, So listen, y'all, it's talking about the children of the southern kingdom. So this is the southern kingdom's captivity. Remember, the northern kingdom already gone. The children of Judah, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Verse 7. Unto whom the prince of the eunuchs gave names, for he gave unto Daniel the name of Belteshazzar, and to Hananiah of Shadrach, and to Mishael of Meshach, and to Azariah of Abednego. So look how we're being renamed. We're being renamed. Does this sound familiar? Say your name going to be Toby, boy. Kunta Kinte. They renamed us. Not a coincidence, y'all. The Most High said this, though. Back in Deuteronomy chapter 28, he said that we were going to have bywords that we were known by. Instead of going by our regular names, we want to have bywords that we went by, not our original names. So this is part of Deuteronomy 28 curse. Verse 8, but Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's meat, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore he requested of the prince of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. So Daniel didn't want to be defiled with eating the food that these other nations ate, because we had a dietary law. We had a standard. We just couldn't put anything in our mouth. But the nations didn't. The nations ate and still eat whatever. Verse 9. Now God had brought Daniel into favor and tender love with the prince of the eunuchs. And the prince of the eunuchs said unto Daniel, I fear my lord, the king who had appointed your meat and your drink. For why should he see your faces worse in liking than the children which are of your sort? Then shall ye make me endanger my head to the king. So this dude was like, look, man, if I don't do this and y'all look all jacked up because y'all ain't been eating, the king is going to cut my head off. I'm going to be in trouble with the king. Verse 11. Then said Daniel to Melzar, whom the prince of the eunuchs had set over Daniel, Hananias, Mishael, and Azariah, prove thy servant, I beseech thee, 10 days, and let them give us pulse to eat and water to drink. So this is what Daniel said. Give us water and pulse to eat. I have not done any extensive research to find out what this pulse was, but I know a lot of churches be trying to do this, and they call it the Daniel's fast. Let's do the Daniel's fast. Completely read over how another nation had Daniel in captivity, and this is the reason Daniel had to do the fast in the first place, because he didn't want to defile himself. But y'all say that the Gentiles are friends. They're our friends. They're friends of everybody. Everybody can make it to heaven. Not even understanding history, reading completely over history, that another nation had the Israelites, God's chosen people, in captivity. Gentiles had God's chosen people in captivity, but now all of a sudden in the New Testament, the Gentiles are going to make it. That makes no sense. Like I keep saying, it's not consistent with the narrative of the Bible, man. I hope y'all seeing this. Anyway, what verse were we in? Okay, I think we're going to read the verse 21. All right, read now. In verse 13, then let our countenance be looked upon before thee, and the countenance of the children that eat of the portion of the king's meat, and as thou see it, deal with thy servants. So he consented to them in this manner, and proved them 10 days. And at the end of the 10 days, their countenance appeared fairer and fatter in flesh than all the children which did eat the portion of the king's meat. Thus, Melzar took away the portion of their meat and the wine that they should drink, and gave them pulse. As for these four children, God gave them knowledge and skill in all learning and wisdom, and Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. Now, as for these four children, what four children? The Israelite children. which God had gave them knowledge, skill, and all learning and wisdom. Because we already established from Deuteronomy chapter 4, verse 5, we already had knowledge and wisdom, that being the commandments. So when you have the commandments and you keep them, you can add on to your wisdom, knowledge, and understanding extensively. Because everything after that is simple, you know. Verse 18. Now, at the end of the days that the king had said he should bring them in, then the prince of the eunuchs brought them in before Nebuchadnezzar. And the king communed with them, and among them all was found none like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Therefore stood they before the king. Verse 20. And in all manners of wisdom and understanding that the king inquired of them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and astrologers that were in all his realm. So he found the Israelites' children smarter than all the other nations. I hope y'all seeing this, man. This holds true even to this day. We're still smart. So why do you think the school system is trying to dumb our kids down? There's a reason for that. Anyway, reading on, verse 21. And Daniel continued even unto the first year of King Cyrus. Daniel continued to the first year of King. Who is King Cyrus? All right, y'all, let's get it. So we definitely going to read in the Daniel chapter 2. But before we get there, matter of fact, do I have it in here? Give me a second. Hold on. So I don't want to jump and then I'd be a blank. I guess I could go there now. I had it here. Let me see. Yeah, let's get it now. We'll probably go back to it, but it's all good. Let me read this again. Daniel chapter 1, verse 21. And Daniel continued even into the first year of King Cyrus. So who is King Cyrus? Let's go to Isaiah chapter 45. We're just going to read verse 1 because we're going to come back here to get some more edification. Isaiah 45. Verse 1, thus said the Lord to his anointed, to Cyrus, whose right hand I have holden to subdue nations before him, and I will loose the loins of kings to open their, to open before him the two leaf gates, and the gates shall not be shut. All right. So I kind of jumped the gun on that, but I'm going to go back into it anyway. But Cyrus was king of the Persians, y'all. He was king of the Persians, and we're definitely going to get to them as we go to Daniel chapter 2 now. Hold on, y'all. I'm sorry. Let me correct my notes. No, that's right. Cool. Let's go to Daniel chapter 2. Daniel chapter 2, and let's start at verse 36. I'm not going to break this whole chapter down, but I am going to break important key parts of it down. So Daniel chapter 36, and it reads, Daniel chapter 2, verse 36, and it reads, this is the dream, and we will tell the interpretation thereof before the king. So the beginning of this chapter, Nebuchadnezzar II had a dream, and nobody could interpret the dream. None of the Babylonians, because remember, in Daniel chapter 1, we find out that Daniel and his companions were wiser than all the other nations that was there in Babylon. So here we find out that the king had a dream, and Daniel was the only one that could interpret it, right? So let's get into the dream. Verse 36 again, this is the dream, and We will tell thee the interpretation thereof before the king, the we is Daniel and his companions. 37. Thou, O king, art a king of kings, for the God of heaven had given thee a kingdom, power and strength and glory. Verse 38. And wheresoever the children of men dwell, the beasts of the field and the fowls of heaven hath he given unto thy hand, and had made thee ruler over them all. Thou art this head of gold. So like I say, I'm going to break the whole chapter down, but in the dream, King seen a statue of a man, and the head of the man, of the statue, was made of gold. All right? Now, this gold, matter of fact, it says, what verse are we in? Let's read verse 38 again. And wheresoever the children of men dwell, the beasts of the field and the fowls of the heaven, had he given unto thy hand, and had made thee ruler of them all, thou art this head of gold. So he's telling Nebuchadnezzar II, who came into power around 586 BC, the Babylonians, that they were this head of gold. And this is the timeline that Daniel was giving him. So we're reading these precepts, but these precepts are covering years of history, y'all. So this is what he's talking about in verse 38. Now, I already read this off the Jerusalem timeline, but to refresh our memory, let's read it again. It says, Jerusalem timeline, 587-586 BCE, second Babylonian siege, Nebuchadnezzar II fought Pharaoh, a priest, attempted to invade Judah, Jerusalem mostly destroyed, including the first temple, and the city's prominent citizens exiled to Babylon. See Nebuchadnezzar Chronicles. So this is the Babylonians coming into power, verse 38. That's what it's talking about. Now watch this, verse 39. And after thee, so after the Babylonian Empire, shall arise another kingdom inferior to thee, and another third kingdom of brass, which shall bear rule over all the earth. So this second kingdom that was not going to be as strong as the Babylonian nation was going to be the Persian Mede Empire, which came into power around 538 BC. Now let's go to this Wikipedia Jerusalem timeline to match this up with history. So it says Persian Achaemenid period. And we're going to go to 5. So it has 539 here. So 539, 538, we'll take it. Jerusalem becomes part of the Eber-Nari satrap of the Achaemenid Empire after King Cyrus the Great conquers the Neo-Babylonian Empire by defeating Nabonidus at the Battle of Ophis. So this is history. It's all lining up. Now, let's hold this in Daniel 2, and let's go to Daniel chapter 5, y'all. Daniel chapter 5, we're going to start at verse 30. In that night was Belshazzar, the king of the Chaldeans, slain. So Belshazzar, this was the son of Nebuchadnezzar II. He took over. And after he took over, he was killed. So, because he had an angel come and write some stuff on the wall during Daniel's stay there, and he didn't know what it meant. He asked Daniel to tell him what it meant. And Daniel, basically, he read it to him, and it said that his kingdom was finished, that it was a wrap, it was over, that he was a through piece. And as soon as Daniel broke the dream down to him, verse 30, And that night was Belshazzar, the king of the Chaldeans, slain. He was killed the same night. Now watch this. And Darius the Median took the kingdom, being about 62 years old. So Darius the Mede came into power. And what's interesting about this man, these people really are something else. They go through extensive links to hide our history. So when I was looking up Darius, I didn't see a lot of historical evidence to prove he ever existed. I ain't see it, yo. And when I looked further into it and I studied the Persian Median Empire, there are historians doubting that the Persian Median Empire ever took place. They saying that it never happened. Ain't that something? This is not by coincidence, though, y'all. They do this type of stuff on purpose to confuse the masses so you can't put the pieces together, man, about history, about other nations, and about who you are, man. So I did find a little bit of information. Let's go to evidenceforchristianity.org. And it reads, it says, is the Darius who built the temple after Xerxes in Ezra 4, Darius the first or Darius the second? So this proves what? That Darius did exist, because this particular question that this dude is asking asks about what? Darius the first and Darius the second. So if Darius never existed, as a lot of historians will say, then why would somebody be asking questions about whether they existed or not, whether it was Darius the first or Darius the second? All right. It says the book of Ezra mentioned that after Xerxes stopped the rebuilding of the temple, that it began again during the reign of Darius. Is this Darius the second that reigned after Xerxes, or is this Darius the first? And the Ahasuerus and Xerxes mentioned in chapter 4, Cambyses and Sidius, this is all a bit confusing. So do have questions. Now, like I told y'all, these names, the names always throw people off. So Ahasuerus and Xerxes are the same people. In the Bible, he's referred to as Ahasuerus. In the Apocrypha, he's referred to as Xerxes. And then even them, it was like Xerxes the first, Xerxes the second. It gets kind of confusing, y'all. So this dude was confused about this. So this is the answer. The Darius during whose reign the temple was built is Darius the first. So the Darius we're reading about in Daniel is Darius the first. I'm going to prove it to you. So let's go to, let's see. I'm sorry, I'll be moving too fast sometime. Let's go to First Ezra, y'all. Let's go to First Ezra. And we're going to hold this. I'm going to read it again, too. Let's go to First Ezra chapter. Let me get to chapter 3, y'all. So First Ezra chapter 3. Now when Darius reigned, he made a great feast unto all his subjects, and unto all his household, and unto all the princesses of Media and Persia. So this is talking about Darius, y'all. But which Darius is it that it's talking about? Now we're not gonna read all this chapter, but in this chapter, or in this these couple of chapters, there was a contest held amongst Darius's bodyguards, and his bodyguards were Israelites. So they was like, who could come up with the most powerful saying? So one of them, or who was the most powerful? One of them said that the king was the most powerful. Another one of the brothers said that women were the most powerful. Another one said that liquor was the most powerful. Another brother said, well, it was three brothers. One brother said that women and the Most High were the most powerful. One said liquor was the most powerful, and another one said the king was the most powerful. So whoever would win this wisdom contest, will be given or granted whatever they wished, all right? So let's read about the winner. It says, let me find it. Here we go. Then said the king unto him, and this was Zerubbabel. Yeah, this was Zerubbabel that actually won the contest. It tells you that we're in 1 Ezra chapter 4, y'all. Verse 13 tells you who it was. It was Zerubbabel. We're going to jump down to verse 42. Then said the king unto him, ask what thou wilt, more than is appointed in the writing, and we will give it thee, because thou art found wisest. And thou shalt sit next to me, and shall be called my cousin. Then said he unto the king, remember thy vow. Listen to this. This is the point, y'all. This is how you prove it. Then said he unto the king, remember thy vow, which thou hast vowed to build Jerusalem in the day when thou camest to thy kingdom. What vow? What is he talking about? Now, let's go back to this website again, evidenceforchristians.org. Answer. Darius, during whose reign the temple was built, is Darius the First. The rebuilding of the temple happened in 516 BC, as recorded in Haggai and Zechariah. Darius the First reigned from 522 to 486 BC, a very long reign, which included the time of the rebuilding of the temple. Darius II ruled from 423 to 405 BC, which is after the end of the recorded events in the Old Testament. So now we got our facts straight. Darius did exist. It's proven through a secular source and a biblical source, that being what we just read in 1 Ezra. So he did, in fact, exist. We know which Darius that it's talking about, in Daniel chapter 5, verse 31 in particular. All right, I hope y'all understand. I hope I didn't lose nobody with that. Now let's go to National Geographic's Persian Empire. Okay, so what was interesting about the Persian Empire, y'all, was it was two nations that formed one kingdom. You had the Persians, who were led by Cyrus and Darius, because Darius was actually from Cyrus's lineage. All right. Then you had the Medians, and the Medians, they also had a king named Darius, or a leader named Darius. So Persian Empire. It says before Alexander the Great of the Roman Empire, the Persian Empire existed as one of the most powerful and complex empires of the ancient world. So how were they one of the most powerful and complex empires of the ancient world, but the historians say that there's no evidence that support that they ever existed? Come on, son. Persian Empire, also known as the Achaemenid Empire, lasted from approximately 559 BCE to 331 BCE at its height. It encompassed the areas of modern-day Iran, Egypt, Turkey, and parts of Afghanistan and Pakistan. The empire emerged under the leadership of Cyrus II, who conquered the neighboring Median Empire ruled by his grandfather. So we find out that the Persians actually conquered the Medians. His grandfather, Cyrus's grandfather. It says, from then on, Cyrus was called the Shah, or King, of Persia. Eventually, he was known as Cyrus the Great. Cyrus was unlike other emperors because he showed mercy towards the cities and kingdoms he conquered. He was known to spare the life of a defeated king so that the king could guide Cyrus in successfully ruling over the captive subjects. Cyrus also practiced religious and cultural tolerance towards conquered people. I hope y'all hear this. This is very important. This is what type of cat Cyrus was. And we read about him a little bit in Isaiah chapter 45 and verse 1. We're going to go back there now and get the rest of the information about him and how the Most High chose to deal with him. So people always want to say, well, you know, the Most High, he did deal with other nations. Yeah, he did. He did. But they didn't have the same relationship with him that the Israelites had. I'm going to prove it to you. Watch this. Isaiah 45 and 1. Thus said the Lord to his anointed Cyrus, whose right hand I have holden. Now he says his anointed. So the Most High anointed Cyrus. He had a job for him. We're going to read. We're going to find out. Watch. It says to subdue nations. And he did subdue nations. He came into power. The Persian Mede Empire. We already read this from this. What site was this? From the National Geographic site, that it was a powerful kingdom. It took over the known living world around 586, right? When they came, I'm sorry, 538, when they came into power. It says, thus said the Lord to his anointed to Cyrus, whose right hand I have holden, to subdue nations before him, and I will loose the loins of kings, to open before him the two-leaved gates, and the gates shall not be shut. I will go before thee, and make the crooked places straight. So the Most High was like, Cyrus, man, I'm going to go against you and your enemy, the people that you couldn't conquer. I'm going to make it so you can conquer them now. This is what he's saying when he talks about making the crooked places straight. I will break in pieces the gates of brass and cut in sunder the bars of iron. And I will give thee the treasure of darkness and hidden riches of secret places. Thou mayest know that the Lord, which called thee by thy name, am the God of Israel. So even though the Most High was dealing with him, he still was letting Cyrus know, hey, I'm not your God. I'm the God of the Israelites. But I'm going to do this for you. I'm going to read on. For Jacob, my servant's sake, and Israel, my elect, I have even called thee by thy name. He said, I'm choosing you for Israel's sake. I have surnamed thee, though thou hast not known me. He's letting Cyrus the Great know, you don't know who I am. I'm foreign to you. You're familiar with Baal and all those other deities, but you ain't familiar with me. So I'm introducing myself. I'm the God of the Israelites. And the reason I'm calling you is for the Israelites. We're going to find out. Watch this. I am the Lord, and there is none else. There is no God beside me. So he's letting Cyrus know that his little deity ain't sitting in control of nothing. He says, I am the Lord, and there is none else. There is no God beside me. I girded thee, though thou hast not known me, that they may know from the rising of the sun and from the west that there is none beside me. Who is the they? Me, the other nations. I'm letting you go testify to the other nations that there is no other God beside me. I'm the Most High. Verse 7, I form the light and created darkness. I make peace and create evil. I, the Lord, do all these things. Now, let me drop down. Yep, that's the one. So let me drop down now to verse 11. Thus said the Lord, the Holy One of Israel, and his Maker, ask me of things to come concerning my sons and concerning the work of my hands. Command ye me. I have made the earth and created man upon it. I, even my hands have stretched out the heavens, and all their hosts have I commanded. I have raised him up. So who is the him? Cyrus. He raised Cyrus up in righteousness, and I will direct all his ways. He shall build my city. I hope y'all are seeing this. Why did the Most High deal with Cyrus, the Persian, so he could rebuild Jerusalem, so he could rebuild the temple? I'm going to read this again, verse 13. I have raised him up in righteousness, and I will direct all his ways. He shall build my city, and he shall let go my captives. Who are the captives? The Israelites. Not for price nor reward, said the Lord of hosts. I hope everybody's seeing this, man. This is why the Most High was dealing with Cyrus. This is why the Persians came into power. It was by way of the Most High, but the Most High had a purpose for them to rebuild the temple. I hope everybody's seeing this, man. So let's go back to Daniel chapter 2. I hope y'all seeing all the history, man, how extensive the history of the Bible is. So Daniel chapter 2, and let's read verse 39 this time. Let's read 39 again. And after thee shall arise another kingdom inferior to thee, and another third kingdom of brass, which shall bear rule over all the earth. So we already established in verse 38 that the Babylonians was the head of gold. Then we got into the Persian-Mede Empire, and then their rulership, their reign to power. And then in verse 39, it talks about another third kingdom of brass. This third kingdom of brass is talking about the Greeks, who came into power around 333 BC under Alexander the Greek, or Alexander the Great. This is talking about him. Now, let's match this up. We're going to go back to Wikipedia, Jerusalem timeline, Hellenistic period. So we're in the Hellenistic period now, and we're going to go to 332. It says Jerusalem capitulates to Alexander the Great during his six-year Macedonian conquest of the empire of Darius the Third of Persia. So we find out, man, it was Darius the First, Darius the Second, Darius the Third. And we find out who took them out. Alexander the Great, or Alexander the Greek, around 332 BC. That's when the Greeks came into power. The Greeks is who we know as our Caucasian counterparts. This is when their history and their greatness, and it's recorded, started. How can we prove this? Did this really happen? Matter of fact, let me read the rest of this. 332 BCE, Jerusalem capitulates to Alexander the Great during his six-year Macedonian conquest of the empire of Darius III of Persia. Alexander's armies took Jerusalem without complication while traveling to Egypt after the siege of Tyre, 332 BC. And you can read about that in Josephus, man. Because it says that Alexander took Jerusalem without a fight, and he did. He just walked in, man. So let's get First Maccabees, chapter 1. Just to bring it all together, man, showing how the Bible is a very reliable source of information and history. First Maccabees chapter 1. And we're going to read verse 1. It says, and it happened after that Alexander, son of Philip, the Macedonian, who came out of the land of Chittim, had smitten Darius, king of the Persians and Medes, that he reigned in his stead, the first over Greece. We just read the exact same thing out of this Jerusalem timeline. Now, let's go to, or back to Daniel chapter 2. We're going to read verse 40 now. Let's read verse 39 again so we can recap. And after thee shall arise another kingdom inferior to thee, and another third kingdom of brass. So the third kingdom is the Greeks under Alexander of Macedonia. Came into power around 333-332 BC. It says, which shall bear rule over all the earth. And what Alexander did was he conquered all the dark races, or all the dark races, or all the dark nations that were on the face of the planet during this time. Because there's only one group of people that does not have melanin in their skin that we loosely refer to as white. And he conquered all those melanated people. Verse 40. And the fourth kingdom shall be strong as iron. For as much as iron break it in pieces and subdue all things, and as iron that breaketh all these, shall it break in pieces and bruise. So this fourth kingdom here, y'all, is talking about who else? None other than the Romans. The Romans coming into power. And the Romans' history, man, is extensive also. So we're going to go to the Jerusalem timeline, Roman period, early Roman period, and we're going to jump down to 45 BCE. So we're going to pick up there because it actually starts, y'all, at 63 BC. But we're going to jump down a little bit to 45 BC. It says, Antipater the Idumean is appointed procurator of Judea by Julius Caesar. The Julius Caesar is appointed dictator of the Roman Republic following Caesar's civil war. So the civil war he had was with Pompey, I believe it was. Yeah, him and Pompey had a civil war. Pompey ends up going down into Alexandria, Egypt, and ends up getting murked down there. And Julius became, they say, dictator of Rome. So this is Daniel chapter 2 and verse 40 is talking about the Roman Empire. So they started their conquest to power way back in 63 BCE. It actually started before that. 45 BCE, you got Julius being Caesar. Now, let's hold this in Daniel, and let's jump. Let's go to the New Testament real quick, y'all. The New Testament, Matthew chapter 1. And I'll be reading the hell out of this and beating the hell out of this, man, because people just don't get this. But Matthew chapter 1, verse 17, it says, so all the generations from Abraham to David are 14 generations. Now, in the beginning, verse 1 says, the book of the generation of Jesus Christ, the son of David, the son of Abraham. So this is Christ's genealogy. So Christ's genealogy goes all the way through, and we get to verse 17, and then it says, so all the generations from Abraham to David, Christ's lineage, once again, the Israelite lineage. This is the history of the Israelites. So all the generations from Abraham to David are 14 generations, y'all. And from David unto the carrying away unto Babylon, the Babylonian captivity, which happened when? Around 586 BC, 14 generations. So from the kingdom of David to the Babylonians taking over, kicking the southern kingdom out of his land, 14 generations. And from the carrying away into Babylon unto Christ, or 14 generations. So from the Babylonian captivity, they skip over the Persian Mede captivity, the Greek captivity, and jump all the way to the Romans, because that was during the time of Christ, for 14 generations. So, y'all, this is roughly around 559 years of history right here in this one precept. But if you don't know the history of the Israelites, the history of the Gentiles, you would not have no clue what it's talking about right here. So let's substantiate that we're now in the time of the Romans, that what was talked about in Daniel, which we just read in Daniel chapter 2 and verse 40. Let's substantiate that. So let's go to Luke. Luke chapter 2, we're going to read verse 1. And it came to pass in those days that there went out a decree from Caesar Augustus. Who the hell is Caesar Augustus, y'all? Well, he was only the second emperor of Rome. He came into power after his uncle, Julius Caesar, was assassinated by the Roman Senate. This is him coming into power around 27 BC, y'all. Around 27 BC. I hope everybody's seeing this. So let's go back to the Wikipedia timeline just to prove what I'm saying. Did I pass it? Hold on, y'all. Let me find it. Because we already got Julius Caesar. Wait a minute. Oh, it's not on the timeline. It's on another one. Bam, there it is right there. All right, so this is from the Britannica. Augustus. Augustus, also called Augustus Caesar, or until 27 BCE, Octavian, originally named Gaius Octavius, adopted name Gaius Julius Caesar Octavius, born September 23rd, 63 BCE, died August 14 CE. So when did Augustus Caesar come into power? Around 27 BC. This was the height of the Roman Empire's power, y'all. And this was during the time of Christ. As a matter of fact, right before Christ was born, because we know that during Christ's ministry, Tiberius Caesar reigned. He was a Roman emperor. All right, this is a lot of history, y'all. I hope y'all understand this. But this goes right along with what we just read in Daniel. Let me read this again. Damn, I should have held it. Wait a minute. Did I? Yeah, I did. Daniel chapter 2, verse 40. And the fourth kingdom shall be strong as iron. For as much as iron break it in pieces and subdue all things, and as iron that break it all these, shall it break in pieces and bruise. So it's talking about the iron. It's talking about the Romans army, man, the Roman legion, man. They were some bad boys. Go back and do some research on all the inventions that they had in their army and how they would conquer nations with their army. So, but this goes hand in hand. When we just pulled off a Wikipedia timeline about the Romans coming into power, Julius Caesar, 45 BCE, and then the second Caesar, Augustus, his nephew, in 27 BCE. And I believe he's an adopted nephew. But these are all the captivities that the Israelites went into, man, the southern kingdoms. And some of the northern tribes, too, because some of the northern tribes ran down into the southern kingdom to hide out. Now, let's get Psalms chapter 44. I promise y'all, I'm getting to a point. I know it's a lot of history, but we got to get this. Psalms chapter 44, and where I'm going to start at. Wait a minute. Let's not go to Psalms first. Let's go to Lamentations first. Lamentations chapter 2. And we're going to read verse 9. Her gates are sunk into the ground. He had destroyed destroyed and broken her bars. So the her is talking about Israel. It's talking about Jerusalem, y'all. Talking about the Israelites. Verse 9, I'm reading again. Her gates are sunk into the ground. He had destroyed and broken her bars. Her king and her princes are among the Gentiles. The law is no more. Her prophets also find no vision from the Lord. Matter of fact, man, let me start at verse 8. The Lord had purpose to destroy the wall of the daughter of Zion. It's talking about Israel, y'all. He had stretched out a line. He had not withdrawn his hands from destroying. So the Most High caused us to go into all those captivities. Therefore, he made the rampart and the wall to lament. They languish together. So this is the book of Lamentations. Jeremiah wrote it. Lamentations is when you crying, man. This is what Israel was doing. We were crying because we got kicked out of our land and we was in captivity, being oppressed by the other nations, by the Gentiles, y'all. I hope everybody's seeing this. Her gates are sunk into the ground. He had destroyed and broken her bars. Her king and her princesses are among the Gentiles. So what was Israel like? Among the other nations, among the Gentiles, among the heathens. And the law is no more. Her prophets also find no vision from the Lord. Now let's go to Ezekiel chapter 4. Ezekiel chapter 4, verse 13, and it reads, and the Lord said, even thus shall the children of Israel eat their defiled bread among the Gentiles, whether I will drive them. So we find out here that the Most High drove the Israelites amongst the Gentiles, amongst the other nations, amongst the heathens. Now let's get Hosea chapter 8. Hosea chapter 8, verse 8. Israel is swallowed up. Now shall they be among the Gentiles as a vessel wherein is no pleasure. I hope y'all seeing this. Yes, y'all, I'm finna beat a dead horse. I'm finna beat the hell out of this horse. Israel was scattered throughout amongst all the Gentile nations. That's why I went through all the captivities to show us how many nations we were captive in and how many of us actually stayed in those nations, man, and grew up in those nations. This is imperative to understand in the New Testament when you see the term Gentile being used. All right, Micah chapter 5 and verse 8. And the remnant of Jacob shall be among the Gentiles. Meaning what? The Israelites that's left over is going to be where? Living amongst the other nations or amongst the Gentiles. In the midst of many people, as a lion among the beasts of the forest, as a young lion among the flocks of sheep, who, if he go through, both tread it down and tear it in pieces, and none can deliver. Meaning we were going to be vulnerable in these other nations, y'all, which we are. Now let's get Psalm chapter 44 and 11. People don't read the Bible, man. I hope y'all seeing this. Psalms 44 and 11. Psalms 44 and 11. Thou hast given us like sheep appointed for meat, and hast scattered us among the heathen. Once again, the word heathen, Gentile, nation, all the same. So we find out the Israelites were scattered amongst the Gentiles, amongst the heathen, man. Same thing. Let's go back to Jeremiah chapter 31. And let's start at verse 10. Hear the word of the Lord, O ye nations, and declare it in the isles afar off, and say, he that scattered Israel will gather him and keep him as a shepherd doth his flock. I hope everybody's seen this. The Israelites were scattered through the nations. Jeremiah chapter 50. This is all throughout the Bible. Jeremiah chapter 50. And let's see. Let's go to verse. Israel is a scattered sheep. The lions have driven him away. First, listen to this. First, the king of Assyria had devoured him. The king of Assyria took out the northern kingdom around 722 BC. And last, this Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, had broken his bones. The Babylonians came into power around 586 BC, took the southern kingdom into captivity. Let's get Ezra chapter 6. I'm sorry, not Ezra. Ezekiel chapter 6. And verse 1. And the word of the Lord came unto me, saying, Son of man, set thy face toward the mountains of Israel and prophesy against them and say, ye mountains of Israel, and the mountains talking about the governments, the elders, the people in charge, and say, ye mountains of Israel, hear the word of the Lord God. Thus said the Lord God to the mountains and to the hills and to the rivers and to the valleys, behold, I, even I, will bring a sword upon you, and I will destroy you, your high places. What was kept in the high places? These groves that was built to worship other deities. Paganism, verse 4. And your altars shall be desolate, and your images shall be broken. And I will cast down your slain men before your idols. And I will lay the dead carcasses of the children of Israel before their idols. And I will scatter your bones around about your altars, and I'm sorry, in all your dwelling places. The cities shall be laid waste, and the high places shall be desolate, that your altars may be laid waste and made desolate, and your idols may be broken and cease, and your images may be cut down, and your works may be abolished, and the slain shall fall in the midst of you, and ye shall know that I am the Lord. Yet will I leave a remnant, that ye may have some that shall escape the sword among the nations. I hope y'all are listening. When ye shall be scattered through the countries. Come on, man. Ezekiel chapter 11, verse 16. Therefore say, thus said the Lord God, although I have cast them far off among the heathen, I I, and although I have scattered them amongst the countries, yet will I be to them a little sanctuary in the countries where they shall come. Come on, man. Ezekiel chapter 20. I'm just going to read these, y'all, because I don't think I really need to break them down. They're broken down. It's self-explanatory. Ezekiel chapter 20, verse 34. And I will bring you out from the people and will gather you out of the countries wherein ye are scattered with a mighty hand and with a stretched out arm and with fury poured out. Let me jump down to verse 41. I will accept you with your sweet savor when I bring you out from the people and gather you out of the countries wherein ye have been scattered, and I will be sanctified in you before the heathen. I hope everybody is listening and understanding this, man. And this is a future prophecy. Ezekiel chapter 28. Ezekiel chapter 28, verse 25. Thus said the Lord God, when I shall have gathered the house of Israel from the people amongst whom they are scattered, and shall be sanctified in them in the sight of the heathen, then shall they dwell in their land that I have given to my servant Jacob. Man, this is, right now, this is basically a concordance class. I'm going to be real with y'all. I just looked scattered up in the concordance, and it gave me all these scriptures. Ezekiel 36:19. And I scattered them among the heathen, and they were dispersed through the countries, according to their way and according to their doings, I judged them. Now, this verse says that we were dispersed, right? Dispersion of the Israelites is also known as the diaspora. So let's get what this big fancy word means. So I'm going to go to the Zondervan Compact Bible Dictionary, y'all. Page 133. Diaspora or diaspora. It says, that which is sown. The name applied to the Jews living outside of Palestine. Living where? Outside of Palestine. Palestine is Israel, y'all. It says, and maintaining their religious faith among the Gentiles. God had warned the Jews through Moses that dispersion among other nations, and not just through Moses, because we already read it in other books. Other prophets said the same thing. But I'm going to read this. It says, Moses, God had warned the Jews through Moses that dispersion among other nations would be their lot if they departed from the Mosaic law. It cites Deuteronomy chapter 4, verse 27, Deuteronomy chapter 28, verse 64 through 68, these prophecies were largely fulfilled in the two captivities by Assyria. We already got this. Around what year, y'all? Y'all should know this by heart by now. 722 BC. And Babylonia happened what? 586 BC. But, listen to this, but there were other captivities which helped scatter the Israelites. By the time of Christ, the Roman captivity, the diaspora must have been several times the population of Palestine. Now listen to this. Paul invariably contacted the people in every city he visited. What does this mean? This means that when Paul went to Rome, when he wrote his letters to the Romans, who was he writing to? The Israelites. When Paul went to Rome and visited the Romans, who was he visiting? The Israelites that grew up as what? Romans. Because they grew up where? In Roman provinces. This was a well-known fact, y'all. This was not something that was hid or something hard to understand during the time of Paul and the apostles. Everyone knew that the Israelites had been scattered through all these other nations. I'm going to prove it. Let's go to St. John now. New Testament, mind you. St. John chapter 7. People do not read the Bible. And when they do, they don't understand it. St. John chapter 7, verse 33. Then said Jesus, so this is the Messiah, unto them, yet a little while am I with you, and then I go unto him that sent me. We're going to find out who the them is he's talking to. Ye shall seek me and shall not find me, and where I am, thither ye cannot go. So Christ tells them, I'm going to leave. Where I'm going, y'all can't go. Now, listen to what they said. And now we're going to get who the they is. Verse 35. Then said the Jews among themselves, whether will he go, that we shall not find him? Will he go unto the dispersed amongst the Gentiles and teach the Gentiles? Come on, y'all. Stop. So all of Israel knew that Israel was scattered throughout all the nations, throughout all the Gentiles. Everybody knew this. Even Christ knew this. I hope y'all seeing this. Now, let's get down to the nitty-gritty of it. Gentiles. So let's go to Zondervan Compact Bible Dictionary, page 195. This is the definition of what Gentile means. It says Gentile, nation, people. Now listen to this, y'all. Usually, it means a non-Israelite people. And you see how deceptive the authors that wrote this were, because they said usually, meaning sometimes the word Gentile did not apply to a non-Israelite person. But we will read completely over this. We will read completely over this. And then to their credit, they're not lying to you. They're just making it difficult for you to understand the term Gentile and how it can be used. The deceitfulness, y'all. The deceitfulness. But it says, I'm going to read it again, Gentile, nation, people, usually it means a non-Israelite person. So if usually, and usually means oftentimes that it's used as to represent a non-Israelite person, usually. But this means sometimes it can refer to an Israelite. I hope y'all are getting this. Sometimes an Israelite could be called a Gentile. I hope y'all are seeing this. I'm going to hold this definition. I'm going to come back to it. But I got to prove it to you. Matthew chapter 18. Oh, my goodness, man. What's that old saying? Reading is fundamental. Matthew chapter 18, verse 15. Moreover, if thy brother shall trespass against thee, go and tell him his fault between thee and him alone. If he shall hear thee, thou hast gained thy brother. Right? Well, who's the brother he's talking about? We're going to find out. Verse 16. But if he will not hear thee, then take with thee one or two more, that in the mouth of two or three witnesses, every word may be established. Verse 17. This is the part I want to get to. Listen up, y'all. And if he shall neglect to hear them, tell it unto the church. But if he neglect to hear the church, let him be unto thee as an heathen man and a publican. So who would the neighbor be? Who would the brother be he's talking about in verse 15? That would be an Israelite. But if this Israelite didn't want to listen, didn't want to conform, then Christ is telling us in verse 17 to treat this Israelite man like a heathen or a Gentile, y'all. So can an Israelite be referred to as a Gentile? Yes. Christ just said it. It came out of his mouth. Man, I hope everybody's seeing this. Do we have other examples of this, though? Hold on. Let's get 1 Corinthians. Let's get 1 Corinthians chapter 12. We're in the New Testament, mind you, y'all. Look at the stuff people read over. 1 Corinthians chapter 12. I'm going to start verse 1. Now concerning spiritual gifts, brethren. We read over terminology. We read over brethren, but when we see Gentile, we just go crazy. If you're calling somebody your brother, that means what? Y'all kin to each other. I ain't going to take it out of context, though. Y'all, because of how you reach it. Watch this. 1 Corinthians 12 and 1. Now concerning spiritual gifts, brethren, I would not have you ignorant. I mean, I wouldn't have you to where you don't know this. Ye know that ye were Gentiles, carried away unto these dumb idols, even as ye were led. This is Paul speaking now, y'all. He said, you know, y'all know y'all was Gentile. How the hell could somebody be a Gentile one moment, did not be a Gentile the next moment? What the hell is Paul talking about? Ye know that you was Gentiles. And what made these people that he's telling y'all used to be Gentiles, Gentiles? Because they were worshiping idols. They were deep into idolatry. Paul is talking to Israelites, y'all, that were once Gentiles in mind, in spirit, in action, and in idolatry. You don't believe me? Let me prove it. Let's go to Hosea chapter 4. Got a little time left. Hosea chapter 4 and verse 16. Listen to this. For Israel slided back as a backsliding heifer. Now the Lord will feed them as a lamb in a large place. Ephraim, the northern kingdom, because it was led by an Ephraimite named Jeroboam. It says, Ephraim is joined to idols. Let him alone. What is the Most High telling us? He told the southern kingdom to leave the northern kingdom alone because they were into idolatry. So what did we start calling them? Gentiles. All Israelites that was into idolatry, we called them what? Gentiles, because they had a Gentile state of mind. I hope everybody's seeing this. Now, let's go back to 1 Corinthians chapter 12, and we're going to read verse 1 again, and I'll go back to this definition. It says, now concerning spiritual gifts, brethren, I would not have you ignorant. Ye know that ye were Gentiles, carried away unto these dumb idols, even as ye were led. Once again, how can somebody be a Gentile but then not be a Gentile no more? And if the Gentiles are going to make it, and Paul just said that the Gentiles practice idolatry, then how the hell are they going to make it? Because that's against God's commandments. Because idolatry is the belief in multiple gods, not just one. So how the hell are the Gentiles going to get salvation? It wouldn't make sense. Let me go back to this definition. Gentiles, nation, people. Usually, it means a non-Israelite people. So usually, meaning most of the time. But sometimes, it ain't talking about a non-Israelite people. Under conditions of peace, concentrated treatment was accorded Gentiles by the Israelites under Old Testament law. So it's going into how we had laws set up to deal with other nations. And it cites scriptures, Deuteronomy 10:19, Deuteronomy 24:14, Deuteronomy 15, Numbers chapter 35, and 15, Ezekiel 47:22, men of Israel often married Gentile women, of whom Rahab, Ruth, I don't agree with the Ruth. That's a whole nother story. I ain't going to that. It says in Bathsheba are notable examples. So, yes, have Israelite men marry nations. It says, but the practice was frowned upon after return from exile. It's no different than now, man. You see a brother, an Issacharite brother or a Judite brother with a white girl, and you frown upon it, right? It's no different. And it cites Ezra 9:12. It says, also, Ezra 10, 44, Nehemiah 10 through 30. It says, separation between Jew and Gentile became more strict until in the New Testament period, the hostility is completed. Persecution embedded the Jews and his he retaliated by hatred of everything Gentile and by avoidance so far as was possible of contact with Gentiles. So by the New Testament, you hear us disassociating ourselves with Gentiles, just like Paul. And Peter, when he got into it with Paul, because Paul was sitting with Gentiles, these Israelites, and he got away from them. There's of this in the New Testament. It says the intensity of the of these feelings varied and gave way before usual kindness. So this is talking about the relationship that the Israelites had with those other Israelites that were called Gentiles, not the relationship they had with actual Gentiles from other nations, y'all. So, y'all, that's my time right now. I hope y'all got some understanding out of this class. Let me mark my place. We definitely going to come back to this definition and probably go back over this, honestly, to recap. But I got a whole lot more, y'all. So, the water for everybody tuning in. The water, thanks for everybody's support, everybody listening in. To Blog Talk Radio, man. And until next Tuesday, man, Lord willing, we're going to say, or I'm going to say, shalom, y'all.